Doublefield Foundation Board of Directors. The Equal Rights Amendment has been on the table for states' ratification since 1972. That is close to 50 years. The 3/4 ratification of the states, meaning 38 states, is required for passage. 37 have ratified the ERA, but Florida is not one of them. The amendment reads, quote, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Passage would ensure that all people, regardless of gender, are assured of no discrimination in terms of property, employment, divorce, and other such matters." Let's be proactive. Start contacting your elected Florida representatives and senators to vote yes on the concurrent ERA resolutions to ensure equality for all Americans.
Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. We have two main topics today. We're going to take your calls to see what you think. In the second half of the show, we'll hear about a controversial plan to drill for oil in the Florida Panhandle. There's a vote coming up tomorrow, so I think you'll want to stay tuned for that discussion. But first up, we're going to hear from candidates running for city council in Clearwater. I hope you weigh in if you're a voter in Clearwater, or if you're interested in some of the topics that came up in a candidate forum. Here are some of the topics that you'll hear about: the Imagine Clearwater plan for Coachman Park. Also, the influence of the Church of Scientology on City of Clearwater politics. We'll also hear about climate change in Clearwater and how the city plans to deal with it. So those are some of the topics you're going to hear about in the next few minutes. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text us at 813-433-0885. Please include your name and where you're calling from, especially if you're a City of Clearwater resident. I want to thank everyone who supported WMNF and Midpoint during our recent membership drive. The station still has some funds to make up, so you can still support WMNF by making a donation at WMNF.org. Last week, the City of Clearwater hosted forums for four candidates for mayor and for the 9 city council candidates who are running for seats 2 and 3. The election is March 17th. Today on Midpoint, we're going to feature some of the work by WMNF's Blanny Whalen. She was there to capture the highlights for you. There were four candidates running for the citywide seat number 3. We'll hear from them in a moment. But first, we're going to hear the opening statements for 5 of the candidates for seat 2. They're introduced by moderator Al Ruschel. First up here is Mark Bunker.
Yes, I'm not your typical candidate. I've spent most of my life in the media, including 10 years in TV news in San Diego. I moved here to Clearwater because I cared about this city long before I got here in 2000. I've been working for over 20 years helping people abused or defrauded by Scientology. And when I got here, I found out that the city wanted nothing more than to keep Scientology off the front page of the paper, and politicians viewed it as the kiss of death to take them on. Well, not me. I'm not going to be silenced. I'm running to make a difference, not just on Scientology, but to give voice to those who feel no one's listening and no one cares. For those who feel that the good old boys network here is favoring developers over people. I want to put people over power and cut bullies like Scientology down to size.
All right, thank you, Mr. Bunker. Our next candidate, Mike Menino. Mike, you have a minute.
Perfect. Welcome, everybody. Thank you, staff. Thank you, Al, for putting this in. March 17th is the start of a very pivotal period in our city. It's an opportunity for us as citizens to kind of reclaim our city and redefine it as one of the best cities in the state of Florida. To be a successful candidate as an elected official takes 3 key ingredients. Number 1 is passion to serve. Number 2 is knowledge of our city and local governance. And number 3, certainly not the least, is leadership experience. I hope by the end of this 6th and final forum that we've been through, that you will find that Michael Menino checks all those boxes of substance. I vow to fortify the trust in City Hall, I promise to work as hard as I can to earn everybody's vote, and I will work tirelessly to protect, promote all of Clearwater now and for future generations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Menino. Mr. Rector, your turn.
I'm Bruce Rector, and I have been richly blessed in my life with many different experiences. I've had a chance to lead an international organization and travel the world and work with thousands of leaders and communities all over the world to solve problems. My current work, we do sports facilities for cities all across the United States. I've helped communities all over the United States solve their problems. I've been an athletic coach for all of my son's sports teams. I've been a marathoner. I've authored a book. I've done many different things, volunteered for many organizations. I'm a member of Calvary Church, and I volunteer my time. I have a servant's heart, which my parents taught me. Through all that, I've learned that communities can be successful if they do two things. If they carefully listen to their citizens, they build consensus, and they learn to collaborate for the good of the entire city. That's the kind of leadership and experience I hope to bring to the city of Clearwater City Council.
Mr. Rector, thank you so much. Eliseo Santana.
Yes, my name is definitely Eliseo Santana. And I want to say that I had a prepared speech, and I have to address something that, it is so important for our city to be a welcoming place, to be able to act out of love and to be of service. I, as your public servant, want to represent your interests, and I want to use the tools that we have available, not out of hate, but out of being able to produce something and that we can make this city the best that it can be. I support the city manager's effort and the other people in the city council that have approached opening up the dialogue, that opened up the tables to be able to make sure that we have people at the table and we have a dialogue. We need to have conversation in order to grow to be the city that we're supposed to be, the city that we have the potential to be. I want to be your servant. I am here to represent you.
Mr. Santana, thank you so much for that. Lynn Teixeira. Lena.
Hi. Thank you all for being here. I am here because I truly feel that I have a lot to offer this city. The most obvious, of course, is the much needed diversity to the existing council. But I want you to look beyond what you see, what I am. So look beyond the fact that I'm a woman, my age, or my ethnicity, because what I'm offering is my track record. I have led several boards where I represented merchants and residents and stakeholders, and I've done so passionately, and I've rolled up my sleeves and I've worked hard for years. And I have accomplished a lot. I have joined forces with other people who love Clearwater just as much as I do. And together we brought over 90 businesses to Clearwater this year alone. Art institutions, seminars. So imagine what I've accomplished as a private citizen. Imagine what I can accomplish as your next city councilwoman. Better yet, find out.
Well, that was Lena Teixeira. She's a business owner in the city of Clearwater. She's one of five people running for seat two in city Clearwater elections. Before her, we heard Eliseo Santana, then Bruce Rector, and then Mike Manino. And we started out with Mark Bunker. I'd like to know what your thoughts are. We're going to hear from seat three candidates in just a moment. But the number here is 813-239-9663. I'd like to hear what you think about the candidates and what they're choosing to focus on. You're listening to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:15 in the afternoon. And for the first part of this show, we're going to be talking about the City of Clearwater elections. The elections are coming up on March 17th. There are four mayor candidates running, and there are two seats that are where the candidates that you're going to be hearing from this half hour, are going to be making their cases. Later on in the show, I really want you to stay tuned because we're going to hear from the Apalachicola Riverkeeper about a plan where there's a vote tomorrow and it may allow exploratory oil and gas drilling in the Florida panhandle on land. So stay tuned for that, please. But there are four candidates for the citywide seat three race in Clearwater. We're going to hear their opening statements now. And after they give their opening statements, we're going to hear what they think about the plan called Imagine Clearwater. It's a proposed $64.5 million project for the downtown waterfront. Some candidates are supporting the project, including a 4,000-seat covered Tampa Theater in Coachman Park and a pedestrian waterfront. Other people would like to see the plan scaled down. So we're going to find out what they say after their opening statements. Here are the four candidates. I'm going to give out the number one more time so that you can call in. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Or if you'd like to say what you think about these candidates or their issues, give us a call at 813-239-9663 and we'll put you on the air. Here is the four candidates for District 3, for Seat 3 in Clearwater, beginning with Kathleen Beckman.
I'm running because Clearwater deserves better. I want to raise the bar on what it means to be a council member in Clearwater. You know, it was well over a year that I decided to run for Clearwater City Council. And why? Because I saw that residents and families were not being represented on our council. I've stood at that podium right there and numerous times to speak for things that are important to people who live and work here, and the council is not listening. We need someone who will advocate for residents and raise the bar on what that means. I have the time, energy, passion, and experience as a lifelong public servant and hands-on volunteer to do that. My experiences working with individuals one-on-one and side-by-side has shaped my priorities. We must do better for our families and our environment. I know I can truly make a difference. If you want more from your city council, if you want leadership, action, clear goals, and accountability and transparency, please vote for me. No one will work harder for you.
Thank you. Candidates will add 15 seconds to all ears, okay? Which is fine. We're not good. We have time this evening. Bob Cundiff, please, your opening statement for us.
Thank you very much, Al. It's good to be here with each of you this evening. Of the 13 candidates that you've heard last night and tonight, I'm the only candidate who is actually a council member. I have been representing the city of Clearwater, the residents of Clearwater, these last 4 years. And I've done it joyfully and happily. I didn't quite get into it happily. A fella asked me, and I'm a college teacher, have been for many, many years, why don't you run for city council? And what I actually did was laugh at him. But then I said, well, let me think about it. I had a little extra time on my hands, and for various reasons. And by the end of the year, I decided to run for office. And these last 4 years have been a joy, meeting so many of you, being in so many different neighborhoods. And I hope to continue that for my last 4 years.
All right, Mr. Cunningham, thank you so much. Bud Elias, you've got about a minute and 5 or 10 seconds, so go ahead.
Thank you very much, Al. And thank all of you for staying here for the second hour. I've lived with my family in Clearwater for a long time. Our kids went to school here. Our kids worshiped here. We worshiped here. We set up and have a successful business here. And for the past 43 years, I've been involved in community organizations in a leadership capacity. I'm a candidate for seat 3. My commitment is to the betterment of our neighborhoods, our downtown, and to the safety and well-being of our neighbors is paramount. So for a long time, I've been on the outside looking in, and I'm troubled by what I see. I see a lack of fiscal responsibility, troubled by the lack of communication between and among our neighborhoods and downtown Clearwater, concerned about the dramatic change that will take place when our city manager and city attorney retire. So it's time to put up or shut up, and I thought I better put up. So I'm a candidate. So thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And our last candidate, Scott Thomas.
Good evening, and I want to thank everyone for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come out and listen to us tonight and take part of democracy. I'm running because I believe that Clearwater needs visionary leadership, someone who is not going to look for the next 4 years, but look into the next few decades. I believe that right now we need fiscal responsibility more than ever in our city. We need to cut the red tape of businesses and encourage businesses to come into our city. We also need to start listening to our neighborhoods. Right now, so many neighborhoods feel as though they're left out, and they feel as though their city leaders aren't listening, and they have a right to feel that way. Thank you.
All right, now some of the questions. Now, of course, were all of you listening the last round? Shame on you. No, that's all right. You were allowed to. So What's the goal of the $64 million Imagine Clearwater project? Is that money well spent, or would you like to see that entire project changed or scrapped altogether? Mr. Elias, you first.
Well, I think the purpose of Imagine Clearwater is to provide a destination not only for the citizens of Clearwater, but for people across the country. We're talking about a unique place in the city of Clearwater. We're talking about a place that is on the waterfront that other cities would like to have and do not have. I think it's going to be a commitment that we are going to say that we're going to do something that's unique for the city of Clearwater, where people from all across the country will come and enjoy that facility. In terms of its economic process right now, I think that we have to be careful in terms of the dollars that we spend. But by the same token, I think it's an opportunity for us to have an economic engine that's going to make a difference in downtown. It's going to make a difference in the periphery of the park. And that in itself will bring business and commercial organizations to downtown, which is something we've been talking about for a long time.
All right. Mr. Thomas.
Imagine Clearwater has many pros, but it also has many cons. It gives the city a chance to revitalize and put something on the waterfront that can be family friendly and bring people in from other areas of the state and the country. But there's also concerns that I don't feel as though the council has fully thought out. We hired consultants and paid $41,000 to make a recommendation on the project, and the city council decided not to take their word on that. I believe that the project as it was voted on is not the project as you see today. I believe that it needs to go back to the voters for a referendum because the costs continue to rise and we need to be fiscally responsible. And I don't see the graduation of this project being that.
Ms. Beckman.
I think Imagine Clearwater is a great idea. I voted for it as far as the development of that park for the residents and for families. I did not vote for a 4,000-seat covered amphitheater. That was not part of it. Nor did I vote for anything that was articulated as an attraction for the entire nation. I thought it was for residents and families, and that's what I've advocated for. I think it's a beautiful venue that should be enjoyed by everyone here who lives here in Clearwater, but the price tag is much too high. We need to look at the environmental impact of all that building down there. I was here in this room when consultants made their presentations about what sort of venue would work for Imagine Clearwater, and they did not recommend a 4,000 covered seat. They had numerous PowerPoint slides of other venues in the area, but they recommended like 21 to 2,400. It needs to be a destination for residents and families first. We could reconvene a stakeholders group, including residents, to refocus our priorities and get that budget down.
Thank you. Mr. Kundev.
Thank you. I'm the guy who's getting all the heat probably tonight because I voted to try to follow the referendum, which we had, and the folks that we had do the research for us. And what they came up with was a 22-acre park. Right now, Coachman Park is about 6 acres. The park is going to go from Drew Street down to Pierce Avenue. It's going to be 22 acres. Right now, we have half of that as parking lot. We don't want a parking lot. We want a park. And that parking lot is going to be green, as is Coachman Park, and is going to remain green. And the space below City Hall will not be. And my time's about gone, but I'll have to talk later about the concert venue.
Well, that was Bob Kundiff. He's one of the candidates running in District 3 for Seat 3 of the Clearwater City Council. And before him, we heard Kathleen Beckman, Scott Thomas, and Bud Elias. And they were talking about their thoughts about the Imagine Clearwater plan for Coachman Park in downtown Clearwater. And we'd like to know what you think. The number is 813 813- 239-9663. And we had someone drop off. Jane, if you'd like to call back, we can put you right on. You're listening to 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. This is Midpoint Monday. I'm your host, Sean Canaan. It's 12:25 in the afternoon, and we're hearing from city council candidates for Clearwater's city elections, which is March 17th. We know that not all of you are Clearwater voters, but I think that a lot of these issues, things like development of Coachman Park, which is where a lot of festivals happen, and also the Church of Scientology we've heard about, and we're going to hear about climate change in a little bit. These are some issues that will affect all of us. So if you'd like to give us a call, 813-239-9663. Also, I'm just a reminder that in a few minutes, we're going to switch gears and hear from the Apalachicola Riverkeeper about a vote tomorrow where plans might go forward for exploratory oil and gas drilling in the Florida Panhandle. So again, the number is 813-239-9663. So we just heard from the 4C3 candidates about what their thoughts are for Imagine Clearwater. Very shortly, we are going to hear from the seat 2 candidates again, but this time they'll talk about what they think about Imagine Clearwater. We have Jane in Tampa on the line first. She's been holding, so I want to go to her. Welcome to the show, Jane. What's on your mind?
Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for the show. And I heard for the first time Mark Bunker speak today. My husband and I, although we live in South Tampa, we have wanted to buy property in Clearwater for some years, both commercial and residential. We have refrained because of the influence of the Scientology just on the local government. Hearing Mark Bunker speak about his intent to look into that and to take action is a breath of fresh air. We will be spending money to support his campaign. And thank you. This is something that has stood in the way of the development of Clearwater. And I was so grateful to hear that today. Thank you so much again.
All right, Jane, thanks so much for calling. And you can join the conversation too as well at 813-239-9663. And you can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text us at 813-433-0885. What do you think so far about the candidates that you've heard? Thanks to Jane from Tampa for calling in. If you're a Clearwater resident, I'd like to hear who you might be voting for in District 2 or District 3 seats. Or if you have a preference for the mayor's race, give us a call, 813-239-9663. Again, we're going to hear from the District 2, the Seat 2 candidates pretty soon about Imagine Clearwater, but we do have someone on the line from Clearwater. So let's go to Dave right now. Hi, Dave. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, there's a couple things that maybe a week ago, the Tampa Times had maybe 2 weeks ago, had an article about Tampa board, and they've had like 8 or 10, maybe 12 females or minorities in 100 and some years. I think that's a serious issue by itself. It's all white males. And I do like Beckman for C3 and Tushara, C2. They seem to be, you know, level-headed and think.
Just to be clear, I'm going to remind people that the two people you just said were the two women running, Lena Tushara in C2, a business owner, and Kathleen Beckman, a retired teacher in C3.
I mean, some of those candidates are very good, too. And I'm still not fully decided, but those are my thinking. The other thing is Imagine Clearwater, the 4,000-seat stadium or auditorium. I don't think there's no place to park down there. That's crazy. There's no way you could get that many people in there without, and there's no public transportation to speak of. I think that's ridiculous. And I would prefer to see Clearwater stay a non-destination. It's already a tourist destination. The beaches are full of tourists in the summer.
Let me ask you this, Dave. Do you use Coachman Park either to go to concerts there or to use it when there's not an event going on?
I do not. I've been there once or twice. And again, usually it's too hard to get. There's no place to get park and walk to get there. Realistically, it's just a lot of concerts that I wanted to go see. It's just too much of a hassle. You know, I can go someplace else and see you with and have, but if, you know, it's just not set up for that. You know, downtown Clearwater does have a lot of issues. You know, I would like to see improvements there. But I'm not sure that that's a concert venue. You know, they have to be 4,000 seats, and that was another article in the Times, to be bigger than Ruth Eckert in order to not compete with them. And that was something that came up a while ago. They had planned a smaller thing, and I don't see a problem with a smaller venue. You know, it can be quite a bit smaller. I've been to concerts out here that were in open areas. You had to bring your own chair and whatnot. They're free, or you know, just a few bucks to get it, and they were very good. It's not, you know, when I don't go to Ruth Eckert, I wanted to go see Joe Bonamassa, but $100 a seat plus parking was like way beyond my budget.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for weighing in. I want to encourage other people to call in if they're from Clearwater. 813-238-8001 is 813-239-9663 is the number to call in. Of course, if you want to make a donation, you can call our business line, 813-238-8001. I was still on fundraising mode. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885 and make sure you sign the text so that we know who you are. I just want to remind people that you're listening to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. My name is Sean Canaan. It's 12:32 in the afternoon, and we're hearing from City of Clearwater candidates. And we just heard how the seat three candidates think what they think about Imagine Clearwater. Now we're going to hear what the seat two candidates think about Imagine Clearwater. We're going to hear first from Mark Bunker, and then from Mike Manino. So here are the seat two candidates on Imagine Clearwater.
Yes, well, I love the plans for the park. They look beautiful. But I don't see anything in the plans that addresses the reasons we need them. We're hoping to bring people downtown, but person after person I talk to says they don't want to come downtown because of the presence of Scientology. So we've got to deal with that. They say they find the downtown creepy or intimidating, or they just don't want money going into Scientology's pockets. So I think we as a council and the mayor need to grow a spine and be unafraid to say the word Scientology and take them on. Work with the federal government to explain why they don't deserve their tax-exempt status. Remove that, which they didn't have till 1993, and that will put an estimated $17 million back into the city coffers every year, according to Scientology's own numbers from their Freedom magazine. You want to pay for a 4,000-seat covered amphitheater? Boom. Done. And short of that, we need to scale back the plans.
Mr. Menino, same question.
Yeah, thank you, Al. $64 million Imagine Clearwater plan, I do not support it as you're seeing it now. I have a problem with the originality of the concept, which originated from you, the citizens, passing a referendum in 2017 that stated you wanted to renovate that park. But what you didn't know was that your park and green space and water area was going to turn into a monstrosity of an entertainment venue that you did not want. I'm not telling you my opinion. I'm telling you what knocking on thousands of citizens' doors throughout your community are telling me. They have problems with spending $15 million on renovating libraries and putting rooftops. They have problems on the orientation of your band shell. They have problems on Baywalk being so close to water's edge, invading privacy and safety. They have problems on losing parking where there's already parking shortages, and they have problems on mortgaging your children's future on a project that is too big for downtown.
Well, that's Mike Manino. He's one of the candidates for seat three on the Clearwater City Council. And before him, we heard Mark Bunker. He was, again, criticizing Scientology regarding the Imagine Clearwater plan. And we are taking your calls about the Clearwater elections right now. And I do want to remind people that just in a few minutes, we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk about the Apalachicola Riverkeeper and about a vote tomorrow that's happening that will determine whether or not there will be the approved drilling in the Florida Panhandle, exploratory drilling for oil and gas. I do have a couple more topics to talk about in Clearwater before we move on, though. And the first is affordable housing. We're going to hear from several of the candidates talking about affordable housing in Clearwater, which last hour on Rob's show, we heard about the city of Tampa trying to address affordable housing. Here are, beginning with Kathleen Beckman, we're going to hear from four of the candidates in the seat three, who, what their thoughts are about how to solve affordable housing in Clearwater.
I have, along with some very talented people, have already had 3 seminars where we invited local investors to be educated on these opportunity zones. This is a great opportunity. It's not actually taxes. It's a tax-exempt program. The good thing about it is that it asks the investors to stay in the location for 10 years so they don't just flip. The great thing about this is we can use this for workforce housing, for the teachers and the new police officers and the service industry. And so I have already begun the process of educating these investors and having conferences and promoting that idea. And I'm looking forward to actually identify certain sites for that.
All right. Mr. Bunker.
Could you repeat the question, please?
City Commission study of the downtown area concluded one of the biggest obstacles to Clearwater redevelopment is housing. Not enough affordable housing units or affordable housing for the working class. What's your solution?
Yes. Well, we have to require that new developments are mixed income so that there are always some places available for the workforce. And I'm shocked that our police officers and our firefighters, many of them commute into the city because it's so expensive here. That shouldn't be the case. Our emergency personnel should be living in our communities. So we need to find a way to help them as well. We need to change the zoning laws to allow smaller granny flats or an apartment over a garage or tiny homes to fit into the neighborhood. We also might want to consider smaller plots for a tiny home community. There's a great plan in Detroit that I love, and we need to continue working with great groups like Habitat for Humanity.
Mr. Menino.
Thank you. As an elected council member, I will work hard and push council into directions and policies to create affordable and workforce housing. This isn't just an issue that Clearwater residents and workers face. It's an issue that our entire region faces. There are challenges to building affordable housing. Number one is, where are you going to build them? Right? There's not much property and land in this downtown area. The last meeting I was at, I was told there's only 14 properties left that aren't owned by the Church of Scientology. They're owned by our city, the county, and private investors. Some issues with attracting buyers into those is the layered financing that it takes to build these projects. You have to educate investors on those layered financing. Builders always want to build bigger, better, and make more money. So you have to have initiatives. You have to create initiatives to make them want to attract them into those areas to buy. Equal opportunity areas are great. They are challenges as well because they are a double down. If you purchase something for $1 million, you have to guarantee yourself to put $1 million back into it. That's not attractive for some investors, so there are challenges to that.
All right. And Mr. Rector.
The candidate just said it affects our public safety and the cost to recruit good police officers and firefighters. Many of them cannot afford to live in Clearwater. That goes for a lot of younger workers with families that work in Clearwater, but many can't afford to live in Clearwater. So I have been visiting a lot of homes and neighborhoods. I've seen some fantastic things that folks have done by revitalizing their home, remodeling their home. But I've also seen many elderly folks in our community who can't afford to do that. So some type of programs or test pilot programs around the country where we can help the elderly protect themselves, but also revitalize those neighborhoods are important. Last night at the mayor's forum, there was ideas on certain sites here in the community that can be repurposed for affordable housing.
Well, that was Bruce Rector speaking about affordable housing in the city of Clearwater. He is one of the people running for seat two in city of Clearwater. Before him, we heard Mike Menino, we heard Mark Bunker, and we heard Kathleen Beckman. So that's the topic. We're talking about the city of Clearwater for the next few minutes, and we're going to go to the phones in just a second as well. But I want to let you know that you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. This is Midpoint Monday. I'm the host, Sean Canaan, and it's 12:40 in the afternoon. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk about the potential for oil drilling in the Florida Panhandle. But first, we're going to go to Rob from Thanota Sasso. Hi, Rob. You're on the air, and you want to talk about Scientology?
Yeah, Sean. I'm in Tampa, but I have friends that live over in Clearwater. Of course, I've been there many times. And even 8 years ago, my friend, she and her boyfriend, took me downtown to downtown Clearwater, And we would go into these shops, and she would say, these are all Sinos, but you don't know it, you know. And it was already creepy. I mean, that's a perfect word for it. I saw buses of people coming in with, you know, and they're wearing these white and black uniforms and whatnot. It's sort of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and I would encourage anyone, any voter in Clearwater, to vote for whoever is going to put up a resistance to this movement, you know, really. I mean, we've already seen it down over here in Ybor City, where they bought up the whole Ybor Square complex, you know, and you have guards walking the sidewalks. It's just not, to me, it's not a religion. It's kind of like a Ponzi scheme. You know, you have to pay money to move up the ladder, and to pay that off, I think they get you to, like, work hours and put in time, walk up and down the street, trying to hustle more people into the cult, you know, and eventually they're going to get enough people in Clearwater where they're going to be able to vote in the government of choice. And I think that is kind of their secret goal. So it's a really weird thing, kind of how they were able to go in there and do this under the radar. And then I guess the St. Pete, the Times, you know, kind of exposed that recently. So I think it's a time for politicians over there to stand up. I mean, it used to be this great little town, you know, very beachy, laid back, kind of these old storefronts and whatnot. And it's going to be lost if somebody doesn't stop it before they get the political leverage to basically get their way.
All right. Thanks so much for your thoughts, Rob. And if you'd like to call in, 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. We're going to wrap up now the Clearwater section of the program with hearing from some candidates about climate. And how should Clearwater deal with climate change? The moderator, Al Ruschel, is going to direct this question first to Kathleen Beckman. So here are the responses.
A lot has been said about climate change and sustainability in Clearwater. What concrete steps are you willing to commit to tonight to address these issues that aren't just platitudes? And we'll start out with Ms. Beckman.
Sure. I think that Clearwater should set measurable renewable energy goals and carbon emission reduction goals. And these measurable goals should be reached no later than 2050 with interim goals. By the end of 2020, the city should set environmental and resiliency goals and take action that will benefit our residents and our businesses. Our surrounding municipalities are doing this, and we are not. Our county is doing this, we are not. We need to be leaders to protect our environment, for our health, for our economy, and for our children's future. We need to put in place a revolving green fund that takes savings from renewable energy and efficiencies and reinvest a portion of that into continuing those projects. Our Pinellas County schools are doing it and saving $5 million every single year. This makes financial sense. It's not only good for the environment, but it's good for our budget.
Mr. Kundev.
These are all good years, good ideas. I don't know what the price tag would be for them. We have a green print that the city passed a number of years ago. We also have a new sustainability coordinator, Sheridan Boyle. And I believe that we should follow that blueprint, green print, I'm sorry. And Sheridan is looking at it now to see what needs to be updated. I'm willing to take her her recommendations for it and push ahead to meet the goals that she thinks ought to be set.
Okay, Mr. Elias.
I would say that the city is doing a pretty good job of sustainability and equipping some of our automobiles with natural gas, changing the lights to LED. They may not be in the forefront, but as far as I'm concerned, they're making an effort, and that's better than not.
Mr. Thomas.
You have 2 minutes.
I think the city is in the right direction now. We've hired a sustainability coordinator, but one thing that I do think we need to update is the Green Print initiative that was enacted over 10 years ago. That's something that needs to be updated. It should be looked at every couple of years to make sure that there's some updates. In reference to Ms. Beckman's statement about making sure that places are ready energy efficient by 2050, I think that's a great idea. However, I also don't think we should put the burden on homeowners and businesses to do that. We need to encourage people to come, not give them reasons, more hassle for when they come.
Well, that was Scott Thomas. He's one of the candidates from the City of Clearwater Forum. And we heard through this hour, we've heard from 9 city council candidates who are running for seats 2 and 3. The election is March 17th. And you can watch this whole forum. It's at myclearwater.com. And there are 4 candidates who are running for mayor: Bill Johnston, Frank Hibbard, Elizabeth Sea Turtle Dreyer, and Morton Myers. And for the presidential preference primary, the last, and for this Clearwater election and any of your municipal elections that are happening as well, the last day to register to vote is tomorrow. And if you'd like to vote in the presidential preference primary for one of the 2 major parties, you would have to be registered in one of those 2 primaries by tomorrow as well. So we're going to switch gears right now. In December, let me remind you that you are listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:46 in the afternoon. In December, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection's oil and gas program issued final permits to a company called Chola Petroleum for 6 exploratory oil and gas wells to be located between the Apalachicola River, Dead Lakes, and Chipola River in the Florida Panhandle west of Tallahassee. Tomorrow, there's a vote in Calhoun County on whether or not to give land use permits for exploratory drilling. WMNF's Blanny Whalen recently went to the Panhandle and interviewed Apalachicola Riverkeeper Georgia Ackerman about the drilling plans. We're going to hear that interview right now, and then we'll talk about it right afterwards. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. Do you support or oppose this plan? Here is Blanny Whalen speaking with Apalachicola Riverkeeper Georgia Ackerman.
I'm here with Georgia Ackerman, Executive Director of Riverkeeper. Georgia, what is Riverkeeper and what is your mission and purpose?
Apalachicola Riverkeeper is part of the Waterkeeper Alliance. As Riverkeeper, our job is to be the voice of the river. So we advocate on behalf of the health of the Apalachicola River and Bay. So in short, we're stewards of this water system.
Well, tell us a little bit about the Apalachicola River Basin, its floodplains, and its habitats.
The Apalachicola River is Florida's largest river in volume of flow. It's Florida's largest forested floodplain in the state. A lot of folks don't know that. The Chipola River is a tributary of the Apalachicola River, so a lot of folks are familiar with those particular springs in the Mariana Cavern State Park area. The Apalachicola River is part of the greater Apalachicola-Chattahoochee-Flint River systems. The Chattahoochee and the Flint River come out of Georgia and meet up at Lake Seminole and come to the confluence to form the Apalachicola River. So the river flows from Chattahoochee, Florida, on the Florida side, down to the Gulf of Mexico. The health of the Apalachicola River and Bay are very connected. The freshwater flow feeds the Apalachicola Bay and its estuary, which also supports the eastern Gulf of Mexico. So the river, its health, and the entire floodplain are very important to the state of Florida, as well as to both the commercial and recreational fishing industry of the eastern Gulf of Mexico, a big part of Florida.
Do they use the water at all for human consumption?
Parts of the watershed, yes. So, for example, in Port St. Joe, Florida, the drinking water comes off an intake canal off the Chipola River.
Tell us a little bit about the Florida Department of Oil and Gas Program has issued final permits to Chola Petroleum for 6 exploratory oil and gas wells. Where are those going to be, and why is Riverkeeper opposed to that, and what effect will that be for our state?
Apalachicola Riverkeeper did submit comments of opposition to Choya's 6 oil and gas permit applications when those were submitted. Those went to the state in September of 2018. The permits have been under consideration until December of 2019, when the oil and gas program at DEP did approve those permits. Those 6 permits, there are 4 pads, there would be 6 wells. Those wells are all located in the Apalachicola floodplain between the Dead Lakes, Apalachicola River, and Chipola River. There's a lot of reasons to be extraordinarily concerned about onshore drilling when it's in an area where you can have connected aquatic habitat during high water events. And so the concern we have is for potential for blowouts, which could be a catastrophic event, but even other concerns would include transportation issues of crude oil, the hydrochloric acids that are involved with the cleaning of drilling equipment, and other contaminants that can be introduced in the environment and carried by wetlands into the river system. And so those are some of the concerns that we expressed.
Would that affect the drinking water, and would that affect the animals that live in the area?
Onshore oil and gas drilling does pose dangers and threats to wildlife. Drilling operations typically are around the clock, so even in rural and remote areas, you're going to have noises and that type of pollution that can interfere with natural wildlife habitat. As I stated before, in terms of drinking water, the city of Port St. Joe, their drinking water comes off a canal and off the Chipola River, an intake canal, and we did express concerns to DEP about that. In the event that there were contaminants that were introduced to the Chipola River, there is the potential for those contaminants to get downstream.
What are the advantages of having these oil wells to the area? What reasons did the state agree to having these oil wells, and who was for it, and for what reasons?
I've not personally interacted with many folks that support the oil drilling. The concerns and the questions that we have fielded at the Apalachicola River Keeper Office has been in strong concern or opposition to the oil drilling. If you talk in a general setting, sometimes you'll hear the belief that there's an economic development factor to onshore oil drilling. We've seen that previously in the basin. There was a permit that was allowed a couple years ago also in Calhoun County. That particular well ended up being what's called a dry well. Basically, they hit bedrock eventually. That argument was going on at the time that there was the potential for economic development in the event that commercial oil is found, commercially viable oil. These are exploratory oil and gas drills. They're not production wells. So in essence, what's happening is an oil company's looking for the oil and gas, looking for commercially viable oil and gas so that they could go to production. So the assumption is, if this commercially viable oil or natural gas is discovered, there'd be a second phase of permitting to allow such. We've had that happen in this area for close to 30 years, where we'll have companies come in and look around for oil and gas, and it's not been found. So part of our argument to the state was that the applicant hasn't really met that criteria. By statute, you have to really demonstrate that commercially viable oil is out there, and we argued that hadn't been met either, but the permits have been issued nonetheless.
Is it too late to prevent the drilling now that the permits have been granted?
There's a couple different phases of permitting. The state oil and gas program through DEP is in charge of the oil and gas drilling regulation and protocol, if you will. The land use has to be approved by the county. So these permits will still have to go before the Calhoun County Commission for approval for the land use category. We expect that to happen in February. I would encourage people to either continue to watch our website, apalachicolariverkeeper.org, or they can also check in with the Calhoun County website to see when that hearing will be. People are continuing, particularly Calhoun County residents. There are many that are opposed to, that are concerned about the ecology and the economy of the region should negative impacts happen. They're also concerned about downstream users. The city of Apalachicola filed comments of concern with the state, and they also passed a city resolution opposing oil and gas drilling in the floodplain. So people are very concerned. They're very worried about the outcome of the oil drilling. There's also concern that this could attract more exploratory oil drilling in our region, and that would be really troubling.
This is the Forgotten Coast. Why should people who don't live here be concerned about this?
We're in a time of climate shift, and I think most people are aware of that. We also know that the majority of Floridians oppose offshore oil drilling, and that includes many of our elected officials. Onshore oil drilling poses some of the same types of risks to communities as offshore drilling does. We're all very familiar with the Deep Horizon. We're approaching the 10-year anniversary of the Deepwater Horizon spill. And so we have to really protect all of Florida. The Apalachicola River floodplain is one of the most biodiverse places in North America. We're recognized internationally by the United Nations through the what's called the Man in the Biosphere program. Because of species density, we have a floodplain that is very pristine, and so protecting water is important for all of us. It's connected, and oil and gas drilling doesn't fall under the category of protecting. It introduces tremendous risks to both the economy and the ecology of the region. So we would encourage everybody to get informed about the risks of oil and gas drilling so that they can make informed decisions. And the more you learn, the more powerful you become.
Is there anything else that you would like to tell our listeners?
I would encourage folks to visit the Apalachicola River and Bay. We know that when people connect with their natural habitat and understand it better, they're more apt to protect it and care about it. And so it's a really beautiful region, and protecting the ecology of it is good for all of us.
And if they want to learn any more about your organization, how can they get a hold of you?
Our website is pretty simple. It's apalachicolariverkeeper.org.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's WMNF News volunteer Blanny Whalen speaking last month with Apalachicola Riverkeeper Georgia Ackerman about proposed oil drilling in the Florida Panhandle. They didn't know at the time, but tomorrow there is a vote in Calhoun County on whether or not to give land use permits for exploratory drilling. And joining me in the studio right now is Blanny Whalen. So I want to thank you to traveling for the Panhandle to bring our listeners this story. Blanny, what's it like there? What's the nature like in the Apalachicola River Basin?
Honestly, I think it's the most beautiful area in all of Florida. The Apalachicola River is, and people do not know this, is the largest river in the state of Florida as a, when we account for the flow. It starts out at the Georgia-Florida border and goes all the way down. The Chipola River is a tributary of that, as well as we have the Dead Lakes. They're all kind of smudged in the same area there, and are interconnected. It's an amazingly beautiful area. As she said, there is so many species here. There's 1,300 species of plants. There's 50 species of mammals. It's more than anywhere else in the state of Florida in one location. The beauty of the area, the floodplain, and all that water goes down to the Gulf of Mexico. And in the Gulf of Mexico, this is where we get almost all our oysters. 90% of our oysters come from Apalachicola Bay. And if there's any toxins that go in there, it's going to affect our fishing, our scalloping, our oysters, all these different things. There are amazing beaches that go into from the basin of the Apalachicola. You have St. George, St. Joseph, St. Vincent, Alligator Point. All these areas are pristine beaches that will be that have the potential of being destroyed. Now, we went to the area where the floodplain is, in the area near where the drilling will be occurring. This area is wet. There's up to, from a half inch to several feet of water. And this is where they're going to be drilling. When there's a good rainfall or anything, all the chemicals that go into drilling will go right into the water.
Go ahead.
This is a major concern.
And there's a vote tomorrow in Calhoun County on whether or not to give the land use permits for exploratory drilling. Well, I want to thank you so much for that report, Blanny. Thanks for talking with the Apalachicola Riverkeeper, Georgia Ackerman, about this issue.
And I wanted to say that if you go on to apalachicolariverkeeper.org, they will have the names of place of the county commissioners Congressman and the state senator that you can call. They have the numbers. You can call them or write them, and you can easily find that on their website.
And I want to thank everyone who called into the show today. If you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, give me a call at 813-238-8001, extension 114, and I'll play your message next show. And if you missed any of this show, you can listen to it on our website, wmnf.org/news. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. And I want to thank our news volunteer, Blanny Whalen, and engineers Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. And I want to thank everyone who supported WMNF and Midpoint during our recent membership drive. You can still support the station by making a donation at WMNF.org. Coming up next is Latino 54 with Franco Silva, so I hope you stay tuned for some great Latino music. That's coming up right after NPR headlines. On WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Clearwater, and Lakeland, thanks so much for listening.